Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Beitza is daf Zayin. Yesterday's daf, we got right up to the midpoint of Vav Amud Beis. So we're going to pick it up today from Vav Amud Beis. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. We'll learn L'Zeich Nishmas Los Lupin Zaltzman. Discussion has been since the beginning of the Masechta and will continue to be eggs. We're going to actually take some time today over the course of the daf to discuss a little bit about the anatomy. Something perhaps we should have discussed in the beginning, just so that we have a better understanding. But you'll see in today's daf, you really need to know a little bit of anatomy in order to understand some of the issues that we're going to be discussing today. So today we'll look a little bit of anatomy. I did not bring pictures with me, and I'm very happy I didn't bring pictures with me. But if in the event you want to actually see it inside, there's plenty of resources in terms of seeing it. But okay, that we'll discuss later. Yesterday's discussion in the Gemara, daf vav, a continuation of the discussion of the 2 days of Yontif, which was a big discussion back on Daf Hey, all the way back to Daf Dalid. In the 2 days of Yontif, we discussed yesterday in the context of burial, right, where the Gemara says on day one of Yontif, you can ask a guard to bury. If Rachman Lasson, you have somebody you need to bury on day one of Yontif, so you can ask a guard to do so. And on day two, you can bury actually yourself. In other words, Jews can bury the dead on second day of Yontif, right? The Gemara attempts to qualify. The Gemara doesn't qualify. The Gemara says you can do it under any circumstance. There's a lengthy discussion already by the Rishonim whether or not this should be practiced where we bury on the second day of Yontif. Yesterday on the Shabbos, according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, was very opposed to the idea of burying on the second day of Yontif. Okay, we discussed this yesterday. And then after that, we got back to the discussion of birthing on Yontif. Meaning if an animal gives birth to an eagle, to a calf on Yontif, so the calf you can eat actually on Yontif itself. Okay, the Gemara points out that's not a muktzah issue, it's not an olad issue, because you could have eaten the calf even inside the mother. The mother, you can shech the mother, the calf inside as well becomes mutter. This is the halach of Ben Pekua. We discussed it back in Chulin. So in terms of a calf which is born on Yontif, so that calf you can eat on Yontif. What about if a chick hatches on Yontif? Can you eat the chick on Yontif? So that, the Gemara points out, that's a machlokas, meaning this may be the perfect example of muksa, of nolad. So the Gemara quotes the opinion of Rav, and Rav says he can't do it. You can't eat the chick that hatches on Yontif. This is a perfect example of muksa. Prior to this point in time, there's no way you could eat the chick. And then the Gemara quotes the opinion of either Shmuel or Rav Yochanan, questionable about who said it, but then the Gemara quoted the opinion of Shmuel or Rav Yochanan and says that it's not muksa. And there's an argument to make in terms of why it shouldn't be muksa, and that was yesterday's daf. And then the Gemara quoted Braisa supporting each position, supporting the position of Rav, supporting the position of Shmuel and Rav Yochanan, and that's where we ended off yesterday. Tana Rabbanan, we're in the middle of the Amud on Vav Amud Beis, and smack in the middle, Tana Rabbanan, Efroach Shenolad B'yamtav Aser. You have a chick that's laid on Yontif, it'd be prohibited. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Af Bechol Aser. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says this would be true during the week as well. Meaning, the Tana Kama is just attacking one issue, and that's a muksa issue. Meaning, that when the chick hatches on Yontif, so it's muksa, it's nolad. In other words, the chick was inside the shell, and then it comes and emerges from the shell on Yontif itself, so that's a classic example of muksa. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, can we leave the Yontif, leave the world of Yontif for just a moment and enter into the world of Isva Heter, meaning kashrus. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says that when the chick emerges from the egg, it's not yet kosher. Lefisha lo niftechu einav. It hasn't opened its eyes yet. Prior to opening its eyes, so it's considered a sheretz. Why do I use that term? Because the Gemara is about to use that term in just a second. So in other words, the basically interesting position of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. A chick, when it hatches, does not have the status of an oaf. It does not have the status of a bird. It first has to develop a little bit more. And the point of development, of maturation, in terms of when now it leaves the world of what we would call a creepy, crawly thing, something that's crawling on the ground, versus a bird, is when it opens its eyes. And so therefore, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says that this chick that emerges, it, forget moksa, you can't eat it, it's not kosher. So then the Gemara quotes the Braisa. The Braisa quotes the Pasuk in Parsha Shemini. Right, we just saw this these Pasukim a couple weeks ago. Any sheretz, a sheretz al aretz, anything that crawls on the ground. So, which includes a frochim shel niftechu einehem, a chick just after hatching, hasn't opened its eyes yet. So it is considered a sheretz. So who is that Bryce? And therefore, just like a sheretz is prohibited to eat, so to the chick you're prohibited to eat. So Kaman Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, obviously the author of the Bryce is like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, Adkan. Okay, that's And with that, we move on. I'm Rav Huna, I'm a Rav. Okay, a good part of today's daf is going to revolve around the next two lines of Gemara. So let's get these two lines of Gemara down well. Won't be that hard. It's not that complicated. But really, almost half of today's daf is dedicated to these lines of Rav Huna. I'm Rav Huna, I'm a Rav. Beitza im yitziasa nigmara. Okay, period. The beitza, as it is, upon its emergence, it is completed. Good. Okay, now at least you know what the building block is for the rest of, for the next half of today's daf. Okay, so it's a cryptic statement, it's an enigmatic statement, there's not much clarity involved in the statement, but basically I'll read, I'll translate, when it emerges, in Yitziasa, Nigmara, it is completed, it is finished. Okay, what context was he saying it in? So the Gemara is going to make a number of attempts of trying to understand the statement. So this will be attempt number one. Perhaps over here the discussion is an issue of basar b'chalav. Okay, we know. Torah forbids us from eating meat and milk together. Meat and milk is aser min haTorah when it's cooked together. Okay, when it's not cooked together, but it's aser min haRabbanan. We also know, we learned back in Chulin, that this the iser min haTorah only applies to red meat, meat that comes from a cow or, in other words, an animal. But any animal. But if chaya, I'm just reminding myself, chaya may not be nisa daraisa. Chaya may be nisa darabanan. Okay, I don't remember the halacha in terms of whether it's nisa daraisa or nisa darabanan. Okay. Anyway, bird we all know is asam midarabanan. To eat the meat of a bird, right, chicken, fowl, together with milk is asam midarabanan. You remember back in Chulin, there was a community who followed the opinion of Rav Yosef Gluli. Rav Yosef Gluli was of the opinion that it's not even an Issa Derabbanan, it's Mutter. It's Mutter Lagamre. Okay, we don't hold like Rav Yosef Gluli, by fish and by grasshoppers. So we are Mekel. In other words, that's not considered meat, Lagabe Basar B'chalav, not even Midarabbanan. And so therefore, you can have your fish and your grasshoppers together with milk, and that's no problem. Okay. So maybe what the Gemara here is going to suggest is as following. Now we also know that eggs upon emergence from the hen are considered parv, right? We know that, meaning that and we eat our eggs together with milk. Fine. Why do eggs not have a fleshic status? I mean, in other words, why not simply say that just like the chicken itself is basar midrabanan vis-a-vis basar b'chalav, so why not say the egg itself? So it's a reasonable question, meaning why didn't the Chachamim extend the gzera to the eggs as well? Okay, so, the simple answer is that the egg is not really considered, in other words, there's no animal inside the egg. Now, it could be a fertilized egg, and it could be that the egg will become the incubation and the beginning of a chick, but we're just discussing an egg made a composite of yolk and white. Okay, I know there's a fancier word for white. But anyway, but in other words, the gzera derabanan of meat does not extend to the egg. We know that's clear. The Gemara's discussion over here maybe revolves around the following. You shech the chicken, and inside you find clusters of eggs. You will always find, and we're talking about a hen, when you shech the hen, you're always going to find clusters of eggs inside the hen. The hen has a reproductive system, it has ovaries, and these ovaries are basically clusters of eggs. I'll discuss more about that later this morning in terms of the biology and the anatomy. So, but maybe what the Gemara is suggesting is the following, that what Rav Huna is teaching us in his enigmatic statement is that only when the egg emerges outside the hen, then and only then can you eat this egg together with milk. But if you shech the chicken, and the egg is found inside the hen, and you're always going to find hens inside the egg, eggs inside the hen, okay, thank you. So these eggs are considered fleshic, and you cannot eat these eggs with milk. So the Gemara says, okay, that's a suggestion, just not true. The Gemara says, yeah, but we know a braisa. The braisa says that if I shecht a hen and I find inside eggs which are completed, so I can eat those eggs together with milk. In other words, it's just not true. The braisa says otherwise. Ella, so fine. So basically what we're going to have to do now is we're going to have to search for another understanding of Rav Huna. Just a quick word about the anatomy. The Gemara over here, and the reason why I bring it up now is because Rashi deals with it. The Gemara over here says, you shech the hen and you find eggs that are completed inside. Right? Beitzim Gemuros. If you take a look at Rashi, Beitzim Gemuros, so Rashi over here says, afilo below klipas alavana, even without the white shell. Ela shehachelmon levado gamur, v'afa pishamura adayim begidin. Rashi over here describes where, basically, the chelmon is completed, and that's the yolk, that's the yellow, and afa pishamura adayin begidin, even though it still has connective tissue. Okay, just a brief word. Right now, I will say it does not make a difference, and later you'll understand why I say that. It does not make a difference. Okay, when you open up a hen, try this at home. I'm not sure if you want to, but when you open up a hen, so you're going to find that what's contained inside every hen is basically a ovary, and the ovary is a cluster of yolks. In other words, it basically looks like, yes, I did see pictures. So that basically it looks like a cluster of grapes inside the hen. And what happens is that over the course of the lifespan of the hen, so one of the yolks is going to detach, go through the oviduct, and basically emerge. What was great reading in my crack research team was that how long does it take for the yolk to travel through the oviduct to go outside? So it takes 25 hours. And I smiled and I said, "Oh, wait a second!" Now, when we went back to Daf Beis, and the Gemara said back on Daf Beis, we have a tradition. Says the Gemara that it takes the egg a full day, right? In other words, from the time that the egg was laid, so the egg was completed a day earlier. That's what the Gemara said back on Daf Beis and Beis. So I'm like, they knew what they were doing. They knew what they were talking about. Yes.
Isn't the essential question whether the egg is part
of the animal? Well, that is the essential question, and we're going to discuss more of that over the course of today. I'm just presenting some basic information. The egg. So I'm sorry. So the cluster of yolks are still connected to, in other words, connected to the hen. It's part of the ovary. And so what the Gemara over here is saying, you see, and that's what's troubling Rashi, because the Gemara's terminology over here is that they're beitzim gemuros. So they're finished eggs. Okay, so what we're going to have to do is we're going to have to wrap our head around what this term means, finished eggs. So that's basically what Rashi is saying. Because, here's a little bit more of what I learned in my research. As part of the cluster, as part of the ovary of the hen, there's no white, there's no shell, meaning what it is simply is just egg yolk. The egg yolk is part of the cluster. What happens is that when the egg yolk detaches off the cluster, off the ovary, heads now through the oviduct, so the white and the shell are all going to be developed in that 25-hour travel period during the oviduct. So that when you're shechting a chicken open, so unless you find one egg inside the oviduct, you're not going to find the white nor the shell. All you're going to see are basically the yolks. So that's why Rashi over here is struggling when the Gemara uses the term beitzim gemuros. So Rashi is saying, what does that mean, finished? So we're going to have to say that finished simply means we're talking about the yolks as they're connected as a part of the ovary. It's not great to use the term beitzim gemuros, but the Gemara uses the term, and therefore Rashi is forced to explain it in the context of the Gemara. If you do want to know, you could turn ahead at one daf and you could look at Zayin Amud Aleph. There's only one Tosfos on Zayin Amud Aleph. We'll get to it later on. But Tosfos has some girsos in the Gemara where the Gemara does not use the word gemuros, just simply finding eggs inside the hen. That's a little bit better. In other words, it's a little bit easier now to understand in the context of the anatomy that I just presented. Because they're not finished. They're still part of the mother. They're still part of the ovaries of the mother. Okay? With all that stated, so again, what the Gemara suggested is that the halach of Rav Huna, that only when they emerge from the hen are they completed, so we thought it was a basa v'chalav issue, the Gemara immediately rejects the first approach. It's not a basa v'chalav issue. You shech the hen, you find the yolks inside the hen, so you can eat those yolks together with milk. It's not part of the mother. So the Gemara, and that's a brisa. So we reject our first explanation of Rav Huna, and so now what we're going to do is we're going to give a second explanation of Rav Huna. So, I'm sorry. Ella. Okay, last short line of the Amud. Ella. Im yitziyasa nigmar mutas la'achla b'yom tov. So the Gemara says that maybe what it means is that upon emergence it will be permitted to eat on yantav. Hai b'me'im anasur la'achla b'yom tov, which means then that if I shech the hen on yantav, and again, we're allowed to shech the hen on yantav, right? That's the act of shechit that's permitted on yantav, and I find eggs inside, those eggs you're not allowed to eat on yantav. Perhaps for reasons of muksa. Okay? The Gemara says, again, that's a good suggestion, but it's not true. Meaning, we know otherwise. The hatani will enter the braisa. Hashoch is satana golos and matzah ba'beitim gemurz mutam la'achlam b'yamtov. We know, the Braisa told us. And this is not the first time we're learning this Braisa. We learned the Braisa on the first day of the Masechta. That if I shech the hen on Yantav and I find eggs inside the hen, and we are going to find eggs inside the hen, you're allowed to eat the eggs on Yantav. So v'chitem kamash malam be'braisa ma'idolash minam be'masnisen. So the Gemara says, and maybe, okay, that's a Braisa. Maybe what Rav Huna is doing is he's teaching us what this Braisa, because quite frankly, it was never part of a Mishnah. The Gemara says, well, that's not true as well. Truth of the matter is that this point has already been made by our first Mishnah. Look, the Mishnah said that if I have an egg which is laid on Yantiv, then we have a machlok chin beishamay and beisilo. And now the Gemara is going to do is make a simple diuk, an inference. The adkan lo pligi beishamay beisilo benolda. The whole debate is only after the egg is laid. Ava b'mei iman divrei hakol shayin. But what you could learn inferentially from the Mishnah is that prior to the egg emerging from the mother, you're allowed to eat the egg. Meaning, if you shechted the mother, you opened it up, and you found eggs inside, you're allowed to eat the eggs. That's what the Mishnah seems to be saying, because the only point of contention in the Mishnah is only after the egg emerges. And maybe you'll argue with the inference. And maybe what you argue is that Basila, who says that you're not allowed to eat the egg, is talking about both after the egg emerges and even before the egg emerges. And why then would the Mishnah describe a scenario where the egg is laid? To show you how lean Beis Shammai is on this issue, where even after the egg emerges, and you can make the argument of nolad, Beit Shammai is going to be mekel anyway. So maybe our inference of the Mishnah is not correct. But the Gemara says, Elahad, the Tanya, Shochet, the Tanagos, Umatzaba, Beitim, Gemurz, Matos, Lachlan, Beyotav, Mani, Lo, Beit Shammai, Belo, Beit Silo. The Gemara says, if you're right about that speculation, then what the problem is that we have the Braisa. The Braisa that says that when I shech the hen and I open it up and I find eggs inside the hen, I can eat those eggs. Well, who's that Braisa following like? If our assertion is correct, that Beis Shammai is always going to be Mekel, and Beis Hillel is always going to be Machmir, well, we have a Braisa, and we don't know who to assign the Braisa to. It's certainly not going like Beis Shammai, because Beis Shammai says you're allowed to eat the egg whether they're inside or whether they're laid. And it's not going like Beis Hillel, because Beis Hillel says you're never allowed to eat the egg, neither when it's inside or after it's laid. So, the Gemara says that therefore, that's not a fair read of the Mishnah, because then we have a Braisa, and we don't know who to assign the Braisa to. So basically, back to square one, which again, we're now saying that you shech the hen, you open it up, you can eat the eggs inside the hen. And that's not just the Braisa speaking, that's also the Mishnah. That's the correct understanding of the Mishnah as well. So once again now, a second attempt, and an unsuccessful attempt at understanding what Rav Huna meant. Again, all Rav Huna says is that when the egg emerges, it's completed. So we think it's a basa b'chalav issue. It's not. We think it's an issue of anyantif, if I shech the hen, I can't eat the eggs inside, but you can. So once again, what did Rav Huna mean? Ella. We're two lines from the bottom on Vav Amud Beis. Im yitziyasa nigmara umegadal safrochim b'me'ima. Einam megadelos efrochim. So the Gemara says the difference will be as follows. When the egg emerges, so then the egg, assuming it's fertilized, will produce a chick. And the egg inside the hen, even, now this is where it gets a little bit tricky, I'm not sure, but even if it's fertilized, will not be, in other words, has not gotten enough development, it is, and therefore will not produce a chick. Now, in terms of the fertilization of an egg, again, going back to my crack research last night, so when exactly is the egg fertilized? So the egg is fertilized in the oviduct, meaning in the ovary itself, the egg does not get fertilized. What happens is that one of the eggs detaches off the ovary, goes into the oviduct. The fertilization, the sperm that's introduced by the male, by the rooster, is going to find its way into the oviduct, and fertilization will occur in the oviduct itself. So, when the Gemara over here is describing an egg that's found inside the hen, so the only possibility that this will end up becoming a chick is only if it was found inside the oviduct. It won't be true in the ovary. And I think, although I'm not sure, the Gemara over here is describing, even if I found the egg inside the oviduct, it's still not going to produce a chick, because again, it didn't go through enough development. Meaning in the oviduct itself, the yolk is going to get white, wrapped around it, and it's also going to get the hard shell developed around it. All this will take place in that 25-hour travel period from the ovary to the outside of the outside world. So it could very well be that the Gemara is describing over here, even in that point in time, it's still not going to produce a chick. The Gemara says all this is great information. It's great knowledge, right? We just disseminated good anatomy. But, and I don't mean this, disrespectfully, but who cares? Meaning from a halachic standpoint, why is all this information important to know? So the Gemara says, L'may nafgamina. Gemara says, L'mekka chumemkar. So the Gemara says, for purposes of commerce, meaning, we see this time and again throughout Shas, that in any type of transaction, when there are two parties involved, and that's usually how transactions work, in any type of transaction, so there has to be an agreement between buyer and seller. And if there is no agreement between buyer and seller, if there was a misrepresentation of what I am selling you, so that's what's called classically a mekach taos. That is a sale based on false advertising, on false promotion, and basically it doesn't register as a sale. And the money goes back to the buyer, and product goes back to the seller. Good. So the Gemara points out over here, this is where it's going to play out in the halachic realm. It's not a basa b'chalav issue. It's not a muktzah issue for yontiv, but it's a commercial issue. In other words, choshen mishpat. This falls under the category of choshen mishpat. Ki ha'da, the Gemara says, let me give you an example. Ki ha'huda amar lehu be'ya depachin laman. The buyer is interested in an egg that came from a live hen, meaning that was laid. Right, the Gemara's terminology is be'ya depachya. Rashi explains pachya from the word peah, which means it squawked. As the egg emerges, so the hen produces a sound. So in other words, basically, I want an egg that was laid. So yavule beidishchuta. So what was given to him? An egg that came from a shechted hen. So also coming to Rabbi Ami, Amar lehu mekach taosu. So the issue came in front of Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Ami says, okay, that's called a mekach taos. This is in other words, there was not agreement between the buyer and seller, and so therefore the sale is voided. Vihadar. And everything gets returned. Money gets returned to the buyer, and the egg gets returned to the seller. So the Gemara says, Pshita, now, isn't all this obvious? So the Gemara says, Ma'od detei mahay la'achila kabayit lei, v'had dekamer depach, mishim detzribein, l'may nafkemin, l'may tzvalei, b'ne b'ne kamash malan. So the Gemara's response is, it may not be so obvious, because when is it a mekach taos? When there is a total qualitative disagreement between buyer and seller. Meaning, if there's not a qualitative disagreement between buyer and seller, just a quantitative disagreement. So for example, I say to you, I want, right, let's talk, I'll give an example in terms of, you know how they sell eggs in terms of large, extra large. So let's say I say to the seller, I want a dozen large eggs. Okay, I'm sorry. I want a dozen extra large eggs. I'm just giving a contemporary example. And so what he sells me, in other words, he gives me is a dozen large eggs. So is that a mekach taos? No. Meaning, what's happening is that the purpose of me buying these eggs obviously is for eating. He's selling it to me for eating. The only difference is that there's a quantitative difference. I wanted extra large. He only sold me large. Okay, so what do we do? So obviously, I bought what I thought was going to be extra large. So we're going to return the difference. Whatever the difference in prices between extra large and large, so that'll be returned to me. That's not a mekach taos. If the only difference between buyer and seller is just a quantitative difference, that is not a mekach taos. The mekach taos comes in when there's a total qualitative difference. I want an egg that emerged from a live hen. He sold me an egg that was taken from a shchuta, that was taken from a shechted hen. Now that's a qualitative difference, because as the Gemara just pointed out, egg emerging from a live hen, that'll progenate, that'll reproduce, that'll form a chick. An egg coming from a shechted hen, from the insides of a shechted hen, that will not turn into a chick. So that's a qualitative difference. And that, to that, the Gemara says, that would be a mekach tos.
In theory, you're correct, except if you're baking, and you need the specific size egg for the...
Okay, I understand. You can come up with a scenario. I understand that. But I'm just... right now, my job is to explain the Gemara. That's my paid profession. So, okay, I don't know about that, but in other words, I appreciate it. But in other words, but the Gemara is basically saying that's the Havamina. The Havamina is that there's just a quantitative difference, and the Gemara says, yeah, but here it's more than a quantitative difference, it's a qualitative difference. Gemara gives another example. The Gemara says, again, there was the what was requested from the buyer was Be'ed Didichra, right? That does not mean an egg from a rooster. Okay, that's not biology. So it means that the hen was within the presence of a rooster, meaning the egg was fertilized. So and what was handed was an egg that was not fertilized, meaning the egg is, right, I'm sure we understood this going in, the hen is going to lay the eggs whether fertilized or not fertilized. Okay, all the eggs that we buy in the market are obviously unfertilized. So so what the request was is that the buyer wanted a fertilized egg. What the seller sold him was an unfertilized egg. Also coming to Rabbi Ami Amrlu Mekachtosu Vahadar. So the matter came in front of Rabbi Ami, and Rabbi Ami says, okay, this is a qualitative difference. He wanted a fertilized, and what was sold to him was not, it was an unfertilized Mekachtos. Sale is voided, everything returns back to both parties. Money returns back to seller. Sorry. Eggs return back to seller, money returns back to buyer. The Gemara says again, the argument you could have made is that maybe it's not a qualitative difference, maybe it's a quantitative difference, meaning that really the purpose of the buyer was that he wanted an omelet this morning, but he preferred an egg which was fertilized because the Gemara says it's a little bit fattier. Okay? Interesting, by the way, that the Gemara does not even balk at the idea of eating a fertilized egg, meaning that's not an issue at all. But the issue is that it's a little bit fattier, it's a little bit juicier, it's just whatever, it's better. So, which is interesting. You also could have argued that that's also a qualitative difference, but the Gemara says no, it's a quantitative difference. And again, what you could have argued is that being that this is a quantitative difference, it's not a mekachtos. We don't void the sale, but what we do is we refund the difference between buying a fertilized egg versus buying an unfertilized egg. So Kamash Malan, so the Gemara says that's the Chiddush. The Chiddush is, we don't view this as a quantitative difference. We view this as a qualitative difference. A fertilized egg could yield a chick. An unfertilized egg obviously will not yield a chick. That's a basic qualitative difference between the eggs. And therefore it's a Mecha Chsaos, and therefore return to sender. E bias ema. So fine. So when all said and done, we have now one understanding of Rav Huna. It's not a Milchik Fleshik issue. It's not a muktzah issue on Yantiv, but rather it's just a very simple and basic issue that only when the egg emerges, the fertilized egg emerges from the hen, then and only then will it produce a chick. But inside, if I take it from inside, meaning you shech the hen and you find an egg inside, that will not produce a chick. And again, what's the practical difference? Mekach u'memkar, commercial transaction. Okay. E bias ema. We're on Zayin Amud Aleph. We are now at the first wide line of the Amud. My im yitziyasa nigmar. Now we offered one plausible explanation of Rav Huna. The Gemara says, let's do another. Im yitziyasa ruba nigmar chid Rav Yochanan. Dam Rav Yochanan beitza shiyatza ruba meir Rav Yontav v'chazra mutar slach lam Yontav. In terms of, maybe it has a halachic ramification for the definition of leida, the definition of birth. Now we're just talking in the context of an egg. We're not having any global definition of what birth is defined by. The Gemara Nida, if you remember, the Gemara gave a definition of what is considered birth regarding a human fetus. But we're not talking about that right now. We're talking simply about an egg. So what the Gemara now is suggesting is this is what Rav Huna meant. That as long as the majority of the egg comes out of the hen and then gets, it doesn't emerge, in other words, it doesn't, it, majority comes out and then gets sucked back in. So, and don't ask me because I didn't do the research on this, if this happens even nowadays. But anyway, but the point is, that's considered nolad, it's considered born, even though it's now been absorbed back into the oviduct. And consequently, that means that if one that comes out again on Yantif, that's not considered nolad, because it's already considered born. That's another possible explanation of Rav Huna. Now, the Iga da'amar, mayim tzias ha'nigmara, yim tzias kula nigmara, yim tzias kula in, aval rubalo, ula afuki mid Rav Yochanan. Or maybe, actually, what Rav Huna meant is, no, in order for it to be considered the egg being laid, being born, the whole egg has to emerge. The majority of the egg is not going to be enough. If the majority of the egg came out and then got sucked back into the oviduct, so that's not considered born, and therefore when it emerges on Yontif, so then that's considered nolad, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. And that means that Rav Huna is arguing on Rabbi Yochanan. Okay, period. Okay, the Gemara is going to, we talked about Milchik Fleishik as a suggestion in the beginning of this Gemara's discussion. The Gemara is going to revisit this discussion. Kufa. Hashochet satanagolos amatsa ba'beitzim gemuros mataros la'achlam b'chalav. So you shech the hen, you open it up, you're going to find eggs, right? They're going to be the sacks of yolk, and they're connected to the ovary. And according to the Tanakhama, they are halachically parv. They're not considered part of the hen, and therefore you can eat it together with milk. Rabbi Yaakov Omer, imay yomuros begin masuros. And Rabbi Yaakov disagrees, and Rabbi Yaakov says that no, as long as there's still connective tissue between the yolk and the hen, meaning as long as it's still connected to the ovary, so it's going to be considered fleishik, and therefore it's going to be prohibited. Now, mind you, I made this point earlier, but I'm going to reiterate. When I say that the eggs are fleishik like the chicken is, the chicken is fleishik only midirabanan, meaning the idea that the chicken is fleishik is only a dindirabanan. I mean only, meaning relative to being a daraisa. So when we're saying now that the eggs are also fleishik, we mean, basically, that they're fleishik midrabanan, just like the hen is fleishik midrabanan. Okay. Mantan lahadatan rabanan. So the Gemara says, based on this, so now let's consider the following braisa. So again, what we've just seen, a machlokes between the Tanakhama and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Tanakhama says that the eggs in the ovary, in the hen, are parv, not fleishik. You shech the hen, you can take the ovaries out, you can enjoy it together with milk. Okay, you can make your cheese omelet using these eggs. And Rav Elazar ben Yaakov says no, that as long as they're me'uros begidin, as long as there's connective tissue between the egg and the hen, so those eggs are considered fleishik like the hen themselves. Okay. The Gemara here is going to introduce us to a braisa, just one introductory word before we see the braisa inside, and that is the following. Okay, the transmission of tumah comes from the nevela, the carcass of an animal, through either maga, contact, or masar, carrying. What about a bird? The nevela of a bird? How do you become tumah through the nevela of a bird? So an unusual for a transmission of tumah, and that's by consumption. That's by eating the nivlas of tahor. When you eat the carcass of a bird that didn't undergo a shechita, so you will become tameh. Now, obviously, it's prohibited to eat it. So in other words, two things are going to be happening when you eat it. Number one, you're violating the prohibition of eating a non-shechted bird. And two, you're going to become tameh when you eat a kezias of nivlas of tahor, the carcass of a bird. But as we've discussed many times, in order to become tameh, you have to be consuming the meat of the bird. So now this braisa graphically will describe what is considered meat of the bird and what is not considered meat of the bird in terms of the transmission of tumah. Ha'ochem nivlas of tahor min ha'shalal shel beitzim. So if you eat the ovary cluster, or min ha'tzamos, or if you eat bone, or if you eat gidim, if you eat the sinew, and as Rashi points out, this braisa is of the opinion that ein begidim beno sein tam, that the sinew does not have any taste, so therefore it's not meat. Or min ha'basar shenitlash min ha'chai. Or if you ripped off a piece of the meat off the bird, so that is now not considered part of the nevela. Again, it's Avram and Achai, but it's not nevela. So in all these scenarios, tahor. You're not going to become tameh. There was not a transmission of tumah, because the transmission of the tumah only comes when you eat the meat of the unshechted bird. But here, in all these examples that we just gave, they're not considered meat. Min ha'eshkol shal beitzim, min ha'korkavan, u'bnei ma'ayin, o'shem chasachel v'gam utameh. However, if you eat the eshkol shal beitzim, the eshkol, right, I described the ovary like a cluster of grapes, so we're not talking about the egg, we're talking about the, basically, in the analogy, the vine. Meaning, I'm sure there's a fancy word for it, but basically, the actual, not the egg, but the cluster itself, meaning the vine, the connective tissue. So if you eat that, or you eat the korkavan, the gizzard of the bird, or the b'nei mayim, or the intestines of the bird, oshem chesachel v'gamo, or if you liquefy the fat of the bird and you drink it. So in all of these cases, tame. These are all considered part and parcel meat of the bird, and therefore, if you eat the unshechted part, these unshechted parts of the bird, you're subject to nivlas of tahor. So far, so good. Now, this brisa clearly described the ovaries as not being part of the meat, and so therefore, mantana min hashalos shal beitzim tahor. I'm Rav Yosef de lo k'Rabbi Yaakov. Not being part of the meat. In other words, the brisa says you're not going to become tamei if you eat it. So it's, in other words, it's like bone. So it's not meat. So the author of this brisa is not going like Rabbi Yaakov. Okay. It seems the Iker Rabbi Yaakov, Amri Imayu Muros begin Masuros. Because remember, Rabbi Yaakov in the previous brisa said that as long as the ovaries are still connected to the, with connective tissue, to the cluster, he says that it's fleshik. And therefore you can't eat it together with milk. So this now there are two different issues being discussed. Rabbi Yaakov and the Tanakhama are discussing milchik fleshik. The Bryce is talking about nivlas of tahor. But what the Gemara is assuming now is that basically there are two different issues, but the same basic principle. That the principle is, the issue is whether or not the ovaries, while still connected to the hen, are considered part or not part of the bird. So Amalei Abaye Mimai. Dilma Adkan Lo Kama Rabbi Yaakov Hasam Alalinyan Yisura. Avalinyan Tuma Lo. Maybe what we could do is we can make a distinction between Tuma and Isser. Meaning that Legabe Isser, it's going to be considered part of the bird, but Legabe Tuma, it's not going to be considered part of the bird. V'chite Malinyan Tuma Nami Nigzor Afushi Tuma Hu V'afushi Tuma Midrabanan Lo Mefashinan. Meaning, maybe we could say like this. Look, fundamentally, is the ovary considered part of the hen or not? Let's say it's not. Okay, let's say it's not. In other words, because we know that the biology is going to be such that eventually the ovaries are going to detach and come out of the bird, and basically, so even while connected, the ovaries are not considered part of the bird. Okay, fundamentally. But in terms of Isser V'Heter, in terms of Milchik Fleshik, so the Chachamim extend the Gzeirah D'Rabbanan, meaning the meat of the bird is going to be considered fleshik, and so too the ovaries as well, as long as they're connected. Meaning we could easily say that the Gzeirah D'Rabbanan extends to the ovary. In the world of Tumah Tahara, meaning if you eat the beitzim while still connected to the tissue inside, so there, the D'Rabbanan is not going to extend in the world of Tumah Tahara. The Gemara over here says that the Chachamim don't like extending Tumah on a D'Rabbanan level. Now Rashi notes, right, if you've been enough in the Gemara long enough, you know that there are many circumstances where there's Tumah D'Rabbanan. And Rashi, if you take a look at that, at the first long line of Rashi towards the bottom of the Amud, so Rashi over here is sensitive to that. And Rashi writes, Ve'afa pishagazu b'tumas b'mkamas harbe. Yes, it's true, Rashi says. There are many places where Tumah D'Rabbanan is extended, but like l'meimar hachanami ligzer, d'lo nicha lan d'lifshe b'tumas. But over here, if we can avoid the proliferation of Tumah, so we prefer to avoid the proliferation of Tumah. So Rashi over here explains that that's basically the thought process of the Gemara.
What's the difference between this and the
Toskana Ben
Gurion, the 18th?
Yeah, I don't know what the difference is, but I know what Rashi's being sensitive to. Meaning Rashi's remembering the Gemara's in Shabbos and the 18 Zeras of Beit Shammai, and that's all Tumah D'Rabbanan. So Rashi's sensitive. Rashi says, I know there are many times where the Chachamim were gozer Tumah on a D'Rabbanan level. But if here, I don't know why not. I don't know the distinction. It's a good question. I don't know the answer. But here, if it can be avoided, it's going to be avoided. Okay. So good. So now, so again, a basic issue of whether, and Danny really hit it on the head earlier. In other words, the question is, how do we view the ovaries? As part of the hen or not part of the hen? So what the Gemara is now arguing is that fundamentally it's not part of the hen. You shecht it, you go inside, and you can, at least according to the Tanna Kamma, eat it together with milk. According to what the Gemara now is arguing, according to everybody, if you ate it, again, not condoning, but if you ate it when the animal, of course not condoning, it's prohibited, but if you ate it when the animal was not shechted, so are you going to become tamei? No, because it's not meat. It's not considered like you're eating the meat of the bird. Okay. If Iga da Amre, okay, in the Gemara, Dav Zayin Amud Alef, right in the middle of the Amud, last two words in the line, so the Gemara says, again, another version of the discussion that we just had, who is the author of the position that the Eshkol Shel Beitzim, the cluster of the ovaries, you're going to be Tameh? So the Gemara says, presumably it's Rav Yaakov. Because Rav Yaakov says that as long as the ovaries are still connected to the cluster, it's going to be prohibited. The Gemara says, well, you made an assumption, maybe you're not right. In other words, we're not talking about eating the ovaries, we're talking about eating the actual eshkol itself. So the Gemara says, and what's the chiddush? That the eshkol, meaning not the ovary, but what it's connected to, the connective tissue that basically connects all the ovaries together, has the same status, just like the gizzard and just like the intestines. Meaning when you go to the restaurant and you're asking for chicken, so normally they don't serve you the gizzard, they don't serve you the intestines, they don't serve you the connective tissues of the ovary. So these are things that are not normally served. And so the Braisa has to single them out because the Braisa's point is they are considered the meat of the bird, and therefore if you eat it, you're going to be you're going to become tummy. Adkan. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara over here now is going to discuss other biological features about the hen and its production of the egg. Tana Rabbanan kosher tashmisha b'yom no'ol b'yom, kosher tashmisha b'layla no'ol b'layla, kosher tashmisha b'yom b'yom b'layla no'ol b'yom uvein b'layla. If the act of reproduction occurs during the day, then the resulting egg will be laid during the day. If it occurs during the night, so then it will be later born at night. And if it occurs during the day or the night, so therefore the birth could take place either during the day or during the night. The Gemara speaks out an example for each one of these. In terms of the chicken, so when does the act of reproduction occur? It occurs during the day. When does the hen lay the egg? That's during the day. Okay, again, I was on a lot of university websites last night. So but again, a little bit of research, and this is primarily so, meaning that the egg is laid during the day. Kosha tashmisha balayla nola balayla zuat leif. The Gemara here refers to the atleif, generally translated as a bat. The bat procreates at night, and therefore the birth occurs at night as well. Don't ask me, I didn't research. The human species who procreates both during the day and at night well, can have birthings both during the day and at night as well. Now again, the Gemara says, I love the biology. It's great. But again, it has to yield a halachic application. Meaning, in other words, practically speaking, what is that going to mean for you and me? So, in other words, the Gemara doesn't like trivia for just trivial purposes. Meaning, it's got to have a practical application. L'chadrav Mari Berei Derev Kahana. So the Gemara says, sure, there'll be practical application in the following scenario. The Amar of Mari Berei Derev Kahana. Bati B'kanat Shatanegol Meir of Yontav. V'lo Matza B'Beitza. Let's say the following occurs. You go out to the nest right before Yontav. In other words, as the sun is setting, as we're getting towards the evening, Yontav is coming up. And so therefore, I want to know, are we going to have eggs tomorrow for Yontif? So you go out to the nest, you check the nest, and you find nothing there. Okay. You go back and you report, no eggs is Yontif. What happens is, next morning you come up. When I say next morning, I mean, Rashi says, before daybreak, before dawn, you go out to the nest, and lo and behold, what do you find? You find an egg. Okay, now, we know, the egg is laid on Yontif, no good. The egg is laid before Yontif, it's good. So now, what can you argue? Oddly enough, you're going to argue the egg was laid before Yantif. Muteris, the egg will be mutter. V'alo badak, the Gemara says, yeah, but didn't in this particular scenario, didn't you do an examination the night prior? All right, didn't you go out? Didn't you check? Didn't you find no egg? So emar lo badak yafe yafe. So the Gemara says, well, I know you checked, but obviously you didn't do a good job. Meaning, because we know the biology of the hen is that it does not lay eggs during the night, it only lays eggs during the day, the only plausible explanation is not that this hen laid the egg overnight, doesn't happen. The only plausible explanation is you didn't do a good bedika. You didn't check that. You didn't check the nest well. And then we'll give an even more implausible explanation, but again, the biology is such where it's not laying the egg at night. So the other explanation we're going to give is maybe the majority of the egg came out, then got sucked back in. In other words, and as we pointed out earlier this morning, according to Rav Yochanan, that's considered as if it's already laid prior to Yontif, and that's why when you check the nest, you didn't find an egg over there. But again, it was laid before Yontif. The Gemara says, in the same exact scenario where you did the examination prior and then you checked the nest you checked the nest before Yontif, you didn't find an egg, and the next morning you wake up early before dawn and you find an egg, this statement of the Amora is that it's prohibited. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's talking about an unfertilized egg. In other words, so there the hen dropped the egg, but it was unfertilized. And unfertilized eggs can come out any time, both during the day and at night. So the Gemara says, well, if that's true, so then slow down. Let's go back to the statement of Rav Murray. Rav Murray said that if the hen only will drop the egg during the day, not at night. And therefore, even if you check the nest before Yontif, but you woke up early in the morning, you found an egg, that egg must have came the previous day. Why not? Why not suggest that it was an unfertilized egg that was dropped at night? So the Gemara says, "B'di'ika zacher b'hada." So the Gemara says, we know it's fertilized. Why? Because there's a rooster in the coop. "B'di'ika zacher nami ika me'ar safna." So the Gemara says, okay, but just because there's a rooster doesn't necessarily mean the egg is fertilized. To which the Gemara says, you're wrong. Amar Ravina Gemiri. Nope, we have a tradition. We know that with a rooster in the coop, all eggs are going to be fertilized. Ve'ad kama. And then the Gemara, unbelievable detail in today's daf. And then the Gemara says, to what extent are we going to assume that with a rooster in the vicinity, the egg is going to be a fertilized egg? So basically, what does vicinity mean? So Amrav Gamda Mishmei Derav Kol Hecha Dishame Kale Biyamama. As long as you can hear the hen over the course of the day, by the way, not night. Remember, we just saw this in the Gemara. I don't remember where, but we just saw in the Gemara that sound travels more further at night than it does during the day, right? Was it Sachem? Okay. Anyway, so deshama kala biyamam avad Rav Mari uvda achisen bate. So Rav Mari did a little bit of experimentation and he found 60 houses, meaning a length of, I don't know how it's a uniform length, but whatever. In other words, the length of 60 houses. Viika nahara lo avra. Now, what if there are some impasses between the rooster and the hen? So the Gemara says the rooster won't go over a flowing river. Viika mavra avra. Now, but if there's a cross, if there's some sort of bridge, so then the rooster obviously will cross the bridge. Viika mitzra lo avra. Now, but what if it's not a bridge? What if it's just a thin plank with a rope over the plank? So that what people do is, well, people cross holding on for dear life to that rope. So, while treading over the very thin plank. So the Gemara says the rooster won't travel. And then, hava uvda va'avra amitzra. And then almost with like a little bit of humor, the Gemara says, and you know what, I know you just said the rooster doesn't cross the thin plank, but it happens to be that I actually saw a rooster cross a thin plank in order to be together with the hen. Okay. B'mai ukimta, b'desafta me'ara, my yiri abadak ilo abadak nami. So the Gemara says, okay, So the scenario in which you described where the hen can drop the egg even at night is when it's an unfertilized egg. So the Gemara says, "Ki lo batek nami, ki lo batek ema me'as mohavai." So the Gemara says, well, if you didn't do an examination prior, so you can argue that it came the day before. So the Gemara says, well, if I did an examination the night prior, before Yontif, and I found no eggs over there, so can't you make the argument of Rav Yochanan? What was the argument of Rav Yochanan? The majority of the egg came out before Yontif, sucked back in, and then came out again sometime over the course of Yontif. The Gemara says to Rav Yochanan, lo shchiach. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that occurrence is so infrequent, you can't, in other words, that's not a real plausible argument. It could happen, but you can't use that as an assumption. So therefore, if it's an unfertilized egg, and I didn't do an examination prior to Yontif, so then we're going to have to, and then I found the egg sometime towards the morning, it's if it's unfertilized, we'll say, can drop during the night, and so therefore it would be prohibited because of the issue of muksa. Finishing up this piece of Gemara, Amar Rav Yossi ben Shaul Amar Rav. This next line of Gemara has nothing to do with the previous statement, but said by the same Baal Memra, so the Gemara quotes it, and the Gemara says, Haituma Shechika Sakanta Ligluya. If you have garlic which was ground up, so it is Sakanta Ligluya, you have to worry about it when it's uncovered and when it's exposed. Meaning we've said a number of times throughout the Gemara that when I have water and the water is exposed and it was not guarded, so the concern is that at one point in time a snake came and drank a little bit from the water and in the meantime exchanged the water that it drank with some of its venom. And therefore it will be dangerous to drink that water that was nigla, that was exposed. In the time of the Gemara, they were super meticulous to make sure that they would never drink water that was exposed. We nowadays are makel, we're lenient. Tosfos points out a number of times, so I was expecting it that he'd say in today's daf, it didn't happen, but he says a number of times that we're not choshesh, we're not concerned with mayim galuyim, and so, but it, once you know that, so the Gemara then extends this to other foods as well. And the Gemara says that a snake will want to drink water, the snake also will enjoy crushed garlic. So therefore, if the crushed garlic is left exposed, so in the time of the Gemara, so they had that concern of maybe there's some venom and it's unguarded, so the snake will introduce its venom into it, and therefore, by eating it, you will be risking yourself, you're putting yourself in danger. Okay, we'll stop over here. So again, so today's discussion, interesting discussion today, really most of the daf today revolved around the statement of Rav Huna. Rav Huna's statement does is that it was that when the egg emerges, it's completed. So, is it a milchik fleishik discussion? The Gemara ends up rejecting that. No, it's not. Because even the eggs inside the hen, while connected to the ovaries, is not considered fleishik. It's considered eggs, it's considered not part of the chicken. And so therefore, the Gemara said, you kshech the chicken and you find the ovaries inside and you can eat the ovaries together with milk. Okay? So.
The bottom line was
always again. It certainly seems that way. The next suggestion of the Gemara is that it has to do with the muksa issue, meaning it's born on Yontif, and to that the Gemara ends up rejecting that as well because it's not true. Meaning you could shech the hen on Yontif and you can eat the eggs inside the hen on Yontif. That's not a concern as well. So the Gemara gave a couple of suggestions in terms of what Rav Huna meant. It could be that he's saying that in terms of commercial transaction, that there's a difference between an egg which is laid versus an egg which is not laid. An egg that's not laid will not produce a chick, even if it's fertilized. And so therefore, there will be a fraud, a legitimate fraud complaint on the part of the buyer. And so therefore, mekach tos, and the sale could be voided. And the other suggestion of the Gemara is the idea that if the majority of the egg emerges and then it gets sucked back in, so that's considered birth, and so therefore even if it comes back out on Yontif, so that would be considered not nolad. Okay. And then finally the Gemara finishes up the discussion today discussing some of the biology and the anatomy of a hen. A hen only lays an egg during the day, not at night, and it has practical application in that in the event that we checked the nest before Yontif and we didn't find anything, and we checked the nest the next morning before dawn and we find an egg, based on the anatomy, we can assume that the egg was laid actually before Yontif. You checked, you must have not checked well. Okay. Adkan, that's the basics of today's daf. And a lot of detail, a lot of anatomy. And I encourage, meaning I did the research last night. I encourage you to look a little bit more into the anatomy of the egg.